My name is Andy. I'm an alcoholic.
Andy.
So this became the HALT meeting. It was supposed to be the humility meeting, but they didn't fill the room. So I made them change the topic. My sobriety date is January 3rd of 1991. And I also want to thank Eva for sending me the invitation. You know, it's funny, I was at the meeting last night, and I think his name was Roy. The third speaker was Roy, and he had said that he got his email, and it was dated April 1st. It didn't even occur to me to look at the date stamp on the email. I probably would have done the same thing. So HALT, for me, you know, one of the things that I have to keep in mind is that, in the doctor's opinion, it tells me that I'm restless, irritable, and discontented. And if I'm hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, that's really just going to send me straight into the express train to restless, irritable, and discontented. I'm going to talk a little bit about each of these. I'm going to tell you kind of how I react to them and what my solutions are. You know, when I'm hungry, I get stressed out, I get anxious, I get irritated. I'm not a pleasant person to be around. And that's only if I'm just a little hungry, you know, right? If I get really hungry, you know, look out, it's on. And, you know, what's the obvious solution is find something to eat, right? But if I don't have something to eat, my next option really is to ask my higher power for help. And, you know, if I just keep at that, I can dial back that anxiousness and that irritation and that stress. I can get a little further away from restless, irritable, and discontented. I can get a little bit closer to what I'm supposed to be doing that's right in front of me at that moment. When I get angry, you know, for me, I've learned that in my experience, anger for me is not a primary emotion. For me, anger is a result of resentment and fear. So if I try, you know, if I'm doing a four-step on something or even a quick 10-step and I'm angry and I'm trying to inventory that anger, I'm not going to do so well. But if I look at, you know, where's my resentment and where are my fears, I can nail down what my problem is and where my part in it is. I get, you know, and when I'm angry, man, look out, I am out of control. There is no stopping me when I get angry. And when that happens, I'm cut off from my higher power. My higher power can't do a thing for me when I'm in a, you know, when I'm just full blown, I'm just pissed off, and nobody can say anything to me that's going to make anything better. And, you know, I've got two primary solutions for that. One is I can pray anyway, right? Because then I can at least bring in some degree of willingness to not only recognize that there are things that my higher power can do for me that I'm at times unwilling to do for myself, but it also enables me to be open to what other people are trying to tell me, whatever the situation is, you know. If I'm not in a position where I can really do that, or if it's not the first thing that occurs to me, I will, you know, I can call my sponsor and say, look, you know, the sky's falling, and, you know, everywhere I turn is an unfriendly direction. And, you know, he'll listen to me, piss and moan for a little bit, but then he'll, you know, help me talk through, you know, what's going on and you know, what are my options, what are my choices, what are the things that I can do right this minute that can help me get past that and get back to what my real purpose is, which is to be of maximum service to God and the people about me. Lonely? That's pretty easy. I get, you know, that happens when I isolate. And I'm a world champion isolator. There are few things that I'm really, really good at in this world. Isolating is one of the things that I'm really good at. I can be in a room full of people, but if I am completely consumed with my problems, what's going on with me, poor me, you know, any of those kinds of things, then I can isolate and I can withdraw. And, you know, that just, you know, then it just brings on, you know, I'm spinning in my own head. And when I get into that state, it's really hard to pull out. And, you know, it's so easy for me to isolate. It is incredibly easy for me to do that. And that phone can weigh 100 pounds. And looking someone in the eye and sticking my hand out and introducing myself to them or just telling somebody, hey, I'm having a hard time. You know, those things are difficult for me. But I keep doing them. And I do them as much as I can. You know, one of the things I hate more than anything in this world is introducing myself to somebody I don't know. Because I'm just waiting for the rejection, right? I'm just waiting for somebody to blow me off. And, you know, when I get that mode in my head, it's a lot easier for me to just withdraw and not even take the risk of introducing myself to somebody and saying hi, or God forbid, asking them how they're doing, right? You know, one of the funny things that I learned fairly early on in sobriety was when somebody asked me how I was doing, they didn't really want to know, right? They were just being polite. And I learned that because people would say, well, how are you doing? And I would start on my litany of how I was actually doing. And they just kind of, you know, the eyes would glaze over and the smile would kind of like, oh, okay. You know, and then they'd move on. They didn't, you know, it's just how are you doing? And you say, I'm fine. How are you doing? Right? It's just it's a basic social level of politeness. But reaching out to others is really the solution whenever I'm lonely. It's just the most obvious thing in the world. Whether that be in person, whether it be by phone, you know, any option, you know, whether it be by email, text, I have to find some way to communicate with another human being. And again, if I try to focus a little more on what can I do for that person, how can I be of service to that person, that pulls me right out. Tired. I'm tired right now. I got out of the meeting at, you know, a little after 10 o'clock last night. By the time we got to the hotel, it was around midnight. Got out of bed about 6:30 this morning, and you know, I don't function well. Period. End of story. When I'm tired, you know, again. You know, irritable, stressed. I'm unfocused. I can't really zero in on what I'm doing at the moment. I get disinterested in just about anything. I'm not only disinterested in what I'm doing, I'm certainly disinterested in what you're doing or what you're going through, right? And, you know, I think about it. I look back and I used to get a lot of flack from people about my sleeping habits. Now, when I was a little kid, my father used to make this crack that I could sleep on demand. Because I could sleep anywhere. I could sleep at any time. I had discovered for me that sleeping was like time travel. You know, I'd go to sleep and 8 hours later, you know, the time had gone by. It was great for road trips. It was certainly great for when I was feeling lousy, which was most of the time. But what I also learned was that when I don't get enough rest, I'm just bad news all day. And I've had people, you know, give me grief over the years, you know, if it was whatever time I was going to be going to bed, by God, that's the time I'm going. You know, I've learned that now. I've learned that in this program in terms of how to take care of myself. You know, sometimes it can't be avoided, but when it can be avoided, I do everything I can to make sure I get, you know, a good solid 8 hours if I can. And you know, it might be inconvenient for somebody else if I'm going to bed early, but the world is a whole much better off. They're much better off the next day if I get that sleep. You just don't want to be around me when I'm really tired. And sometimes that's not an option, right? Just like last night. It couldn't be. I mean, I could have skipped the big meeting. I wasn't going to. I've got a former sponsor. He's in the room right now. One of his favorite expressions that I still remember is, "Our priorities are what we do." You know, you ask me what my priorities are, and I might tell you what I think they are, but if I haven't done them that day, it wasn't a priority. I didn't make the time. If it was that important, I would have found some way to make the time to get whatever it was done that day. And so in this particular instance, it was a priority for me to attend that meeting last night. This is my first international convention, which hilariously, you know, my wife and I walk into the A3 door this morning and I knew that it being A3, it was going to be kind of a cavern. But I look to the right, and I see these chairs to the right, and I go in there, and I think, oh, well, that's not so bad. And I go and I introduce myself to David, who's chairing the meeting next door, and introduce myself to the other two panelists, because there's only two up there. And they're looking at me kind of funny, and they're like, are you sure you're in the right room? And I said, this is A3, isn't it? And they're like, no, A3 is the really big room next door. And I was like, holy mother of God. But my option this morning, you know, running on roughly 6 hours of sleep, was to spend most of my morning praying. And, you know, I did it this morning when I woke up. I did it on the shuttle bus under the way to the train. And I did a little bit when I was walking here with my wife. And, you know, for me, in my recovery, the prayers that I pray are generally not focused on me per se. You know, it's more, you know, like our third step prayer is, you know, take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those who would help, of that power, that love, and that way of life. These are courtesy of my sponsee, by the way. And, you know, That's what I can do when I can't get to sleep, right? I can ask my higher power for strength. And I get it. I get what I need. Now, I also have another one. For me, my acronym is HALTS, and the S is for sick. Because when I'm sick, man, I am full-blown self-pity, right? Poor me, I'm so sick, you know, or I hurt so much, ugh. You don't have my problem. And then it gets isolating mostly because I'm so impossible. People are just like, you know, we've had all the fun we can take out of you. And then I get irritable, right? Well, what the hell's wrong with you people? Why aren't you taking care of, you know, taking care of poor me because I'm sick? You know, obviously, doing what I can to get better is my first priority. But sometimes that's not very easy to do. It depends on what's going on. Depends on what my options are. Again, prayer, calling the sponsor. You know, these are all important things that I can do when I'm, you know, right down in that self-pity to kind of, you know, pull me back out. And even with all these options that I have to get me out of these different pitfalls of hungry, angry, lonely, tired, and for me, sick. Being of service to others has always, always, always been the thing that has succeeded when nothing else was available. Because sometimes I don't have access to food. Sometimes I can't get enough sleep. Sometimes I can't reach my sponsor. And sometimes I'm just not willing to pray. But if I'm willing to be of service to others, it is always a solution. I can think of so many different times when I've been having a bad time, whatever it was, you know, some kind of bad situation, and I had some opportunity to be of service to others, and without fail, I got through it, and I got through it better. There's a specific, at about 4 minutes, there's a specific story I want to relate to you involving my most recent spiritual experience. It happened last fall. I had gotten an attack of shingles. And for those of you who aren't familiar with it, it's not the worst pain I've ever experienced, but it was the most soul-crushing. I couldn't get any sleep at all because it felt like I was getting zapped with electricity about every 5 to 10 seconds. So there was no way I could get any sleep. It was just driving me bananas. And it hit me on a 3-day weekend, so I couldn't even get to my doctor until Monday. And Sunday night, I had a service commitment. I was going to go talk to this district meeting. I was really hurting. But I was going to go. And even my wife was like, "Are you sure you're going to go?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm definitely sure I'm going to go. It's because it's better than staying here and just being consumed with my own self-pity." And I drove about an hour to this meeting, and I got there. I was shaking and I was jumping. I couldn't stand still. And they started their district meeting, and they did their preliminaries, and then they said, "Okay, well, we're going to turn it over to Andy. He's going to, you know, do this outreach for us for about 20 minutes." And I got up and I did my outreach to them. Something happened along the way that I wasn't even aware was happening. At some point, all the pain went away. I mean, all of it. I didn't even realize it had happened. And when I was done, you know, they thanked me, and then they carried on with the rest of their meeting. And then after the meeting was over, you know, the folks were said, "Hey, you know, we really appreciate you coming up here because we know you're not feeling well." And then I realized, wait a minute, I feel fine. I feel perfectly fine. And it blew me away. My sponsee reminded me of just recently of the real take-home message that I got from that spiritual experience. It wasn't just that being a service for me is my number one when all else fails backstop against these problems, but it was this realization that, you know, when I do all of these things that I do to stay sober, those things aren't keeping me sober. My higher power has removed the problem from me. I can go to meetings, talk to my sponsor, read the book, pray, meditate, be of service to others. I can do all these things. But if I think that I'm the one who's staying sober because I'm doing these things, you know, it's like paint-by-the-numbers sobriety. Those things aren't keeping me sober. Those things are breaking down my ego and my pride, which stand in my way of receiving that spiritual experience. So when I do those things, it opens me to be able to receive that spiritual experience, to receive the help from my higher power so that he can remove the problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Andy, so much. And moving on, I just wanted to say, you know, we're down here in the sub-basement, and I so appreciate everybody who's attending, and our second speaker has arrived. So I'm so grateful for that. So please help me welcome Allison.
Hi, I'm Allison. I'm an alcoholic. And currently I'm grateful to be serving as the chair for Alaska Area 02. Anybody from Alaska in the house? Woohoo! Too close? Okay, sorry. Well, I got a chance to practice a little bit about this topic because I was late. And I was angry at MARTA. And Lyft and Uber and everybody I tried to call to get a ride from my hotel. But it didn't stay that way for very long. It helps that I'm surrounded by all you guys, for sure. Let me just say something. When I first got this topic, my thought was, halt, that's treatment center crap. You know? Never mind that I got to AA through a treatment center. But, yeah, we had a little contempt prior to investigation going on here. And so I started doing a little bit of research. And I discovered that, well, this is how I figure it. It looks like HALT was first kind of put into writing in the book Living Sober, which is conference-approved AA literature. So I won't ever say that it's treatment center crap again. But, you know, I'd never read Living Sober. And it was interesting to read it and to, you know, read about how it came about. You know, that information that was basically passed on, you know, by word of mouth, suggestions by sponsors, you know, it wasn't in writing. So they, you know, they collected a bunch of this stuff and they put it into this book. So thanks for the topic. I got notes, so I'll try not to read from them. Hungry, I'll tell you what. I've had a lot of experience with that just here during this convention. You know, just like our first speaker, I don't do real well on no food. I don't think straight. I get irritable. Basically, it's, you know, I think HALT is a way to identify restless, irritable, and discontented. And that's how I get when I haven't eaten. Now, you know, when I was drinking, if I felt hungry, I would just drink. You know, because why would I want to eat? I don't want to spoil the buzz, right? It would just dilute it. So that's a bad position to be in when you get sober. Every time you're hungry, you think, oh, I need a drink. So, you know, I needed to change my behavior and my thought patterns. And needless to say, when I got here, I was a little bit, shall we say, malnourished. You know, beer diet and all. So now I get to think about, you know, our first speaker was talking about priorities. I need to make, you know, not being hungry a priority. Because, well, in the beginning, it was, you know, it could lead to a slip, you know, an actual drink. But now we're talking about emotional sobriety. I could just be a raging, you know what. So, let me just say, I've got a backpack over there, and it's full of food. And it's healthy stuff, too, even. But I'm probably going to not have as much reason to have to make amends if I eat on regular intervals there. Okay, so now on to angry, which I, like I said, I was experiencing some of that earlier. I don't know about the rest of y'all, but when I grew up, I wasn't allowed to be angry. My mother was the only one in the house that was allowed to be angry. And so I got into this pattern of, I want to avoid being angry or having a confrontation with anybody. Because, you know, if I tried to express anger, it was a confrontation. My mother was angrier. And, you know, of course, sometimes, a lot of the time, when I drank, that anger would come out anyway. And usually not in the way I would have liked. You know, I would say things that maybe I had been thinking, but wouldn't necessarily want to say out loud. You know, that booze, it just gets rid of that filter. And, you know, not good. You know, I would generally end up being rude, malicious, hurtful. So when I got here, I learned right away from the steps that I had to learn how to deal with my anger. You know, that's all throughout the big book, the 12 and 12, Living Sober. And it's neat because now, having been around for a while, I mean, at first, when I was new, when I would get angry, you know, I'd pick up the phone, I'd call my sponsor, or I'd call another alcoholic, or I'd go to a meeting, or I'd work with others. Surefire insurance against a slip. Now I'm able to do a lot of that for myself in terms of, I immediately go to, well, what was your part? Like this morning's transportation issues. I'm in a midtown hotel, okay? Both ends of the street of the hotel that I'm in are blocked off because they're having a marathon today. I needed to plan ahead better than what I did. I called the cab. The cab couldn't get to the hotel because the street's blocked off. So I can stand up here now and laugh about it, you know, whereas before, I mean, that could have been cause for a drink. It definitely would have been cause for a rant. And plus, like I said, I had two alcoholics, sober alcoholics, that is, on either side of me. And they're like, hey, you're going to get there. Everything's going to be cool. Getting all worked up about it isn't going to make it any better. That was news to me when I got here. You know, so thank God I look for my part now. Planning is key. I used to get really angry when I drove. And, you know, I'm from Anchorage, Alaska, and the traffic in Anchorage is not near what it is here. Not even close. Somebody was asking me about our freeways. I'm like, freeways? We don't have any freeways. We might have three lanes going each way in some spots. But I would get pissed when I was driving. Because, you know, whoever was in front of me or whatever, they were going too slow, they were going too fast, you know, they're in my way. And I got over that by realizing that, you know, my part was, I was always late. And if I just left 15 minutes earlier, I was not nearly as susceptible to getting angry. And the traffic's better too. So, yeah, I don't want to get into a road rage confrontation with anybody because people in Alaska like to pack guns. I'm not there. Lonely, you know. This is a lonely disease. I mean, we isolate ourselves. from ourselves, from others, from God. And, you know, that's... I know that when I got here, I was in a very small world. I basically went to work so I could earn money to drink. All day long, I was thinking about, okay, do I have enough? Do I need to stop by the liquor store on the way home? And then I would just go home and I would shut the blinds and I would drink until I passed out, and then I would come to and I would do it all over again. And if that's not lonely, I don't know what is. But, you know, from the minute that I came into my first AA meeting, I didn't feel alone anymore. You know, first of all, you guys said, welcome. You actually even said, keep coming back. That was new for me. Usually it was, out. Don't ever come back again. I heard, you know, we'll love you till you can love yourself. I really needed to hear that. And, you know, through working the steps, through being a part of this program, being in the middle, I need to be in the middle. It's like, you know, AA is a bed, and the more I'm in the middle, the less likely I am to fall off. I have not felt lonely. You know, I don't feel like there are any strangers in this room to me. And I have a higher power that wants what's best for me. I have a bazillion phone numbers. Anchorage actually has quite a few meetings. I have the literature. I have prayer and meditation. There's no, you know, and there's a difference between being alone and being lonely. And I can be alone without being lonely now. You know, I didn't used to be able to do that. I'll end with tired, which, as our first speaker said, and I don't know his name, that's why I keep saying our first speaker. Andy? Hi, Andy. As Andy was saying, I've been tired this whole weekend, but you know, I knew what I was getting myself into. I've been to two of these before. So sometimes it's a matter of, well, it is. It's a matter of priorities. It's real similar to hungry for me. I don't think straight when I'm tired. You know, it's not a good time for me to make decisions or to play well with others. And, you know, when I was drinking, sleep, you know, what was sleep? Like I said, I went home, I got drunk, I passed out, I came to. You know, if I didn't feel like I could sleep, I just had another drink. So I didn't really recognize what tired was. Now I know. So I'm kind of at that other end of the spectrum, you know. I can fall asleep anywhere. On the plane, on the floor, wherever. I have to watch that I don't get too much sleep. But anyway, I don't know how I'm doing on time. Okay, well, basically, just to summarize, if I pay attention to all parts of this halt, to make sure I'm not experiencing too much of any one of them, you know, it's kind of like a spot check inventory. You know, I can tick it off. If I'm careful not to do too many of those things, I am much more able to do the next right thing. You know, what my higher power would have me do, what my sponsor would suggest. And so I get to maintain my physical and my emotional sobriety by paying attention to this stuff. So anyway, thanks for having me.
thank you, Allison. And, you know, I didn't mention that I am Kathleen. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm from New York City. And if you're ever in New York City, you're going to go to the GSO office on Riverside Drive, the Intergroup office on 7th Avenue, or my home group, the 79th Street Workshop, on 79th Street, because we're simple. So please do, if you're ever in New York, come here. And I just want to thank the people who are here that know me, that are here this morning to support me, because I was a nervous wreck, but I feel much better now. And I'm really so pleased to introduce our third speaker, who, as soon as I walked in, came right up to me, introduced himself, gave me a tata, and told me he was from Idaho, and he's just full of life, and so I'm grateful to introduce Kat.
Thank you, thank you. I want to back this up a little bit. I got a loud voice, so. My name's Kate, I'm an alcoholic. And I'm grateful to be here at the International. First of all, it's an honor to be here. I want to thank Eva Sanchez and for pulling my name out of the hat. I want to thank my delegate for putting my name in the hat. My sobriety date is January 9th, 2003. My home group is the Gouger's Gulch Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet every Friday at 8 o'clock in the evening. And we go to a meeting after the meeting afterwards, until we're done. So I do have a sponsor, and my sponsor does have a sponsor, and my sponsor knows that he is my sponsor. So just got to get that. I've been waiting 5 years for this. I went to San Antonio 5 years ago and with a couple of my roommates here and I need to make amends to my delegate Garen. He didn't know that he was coming to this to the International because he was so selfless. He's the delegate and he's been putting a lot of time into service for us, for our area 18. I think he's doing a fabulous job with that. And so he chose, instead of coming to the International, to spend a little bit of extra time with his wife, you know, just being selfless. But little did he know is that his wife came to me and was like, you know, Kate, is, you know, that it just sounds so wonderful. So I'm the GSR for my home group also. So I announce this, you know, every Friday for Lord knows how long. And she came to me and she was like, do you, what would it take to, you know, to get him a ticket? And I said, well, we can arrange that. You know, and at first it was, it was a small deal, but it just, I knew that he was coming and he didn't know that I was, or that he was coming. And so every Friday night when I announced it, I used my roomie, you know, I would say, oh, roomie, you know, how was that? How was that down in San Antonio? Holding hands with 53,000 people saying the Serenity Prayer. Huh, roomie? Oh, it was great. He would say, oh, it was just awesome, you know, and I was like, I said, oh, I wish you were going. He says, I'll be there. I'll be there in spirit, you know. And it just started that way. And I just really kept twisting that knife, you know. And so the taters. So I, first thing I did, I came in and I tatered. Idaho is known for our spuds. And so we have these tater pins. And so I ordered some tater pins, but it was limited on how many tater pins that I can get. So, you know, I called my delegate and said, hey, can you do me a favor? And he's like, yeah, sure. I said, can you order me some of those tater pins so, you know, when I go to the International, I can be passing them out? He's like, it took him, I had to call him three times on it, but he got them, you know. And so, but no, I apologize for twisting that knife, Garen. You know, this is such a wonderful event, and it really is. It's an honor to be standing up here. I'm full of life, absolutely full of life. I was waiting 5 years for this, and I tried making my reservations about 3 years ago. And, yeah, the lady on the phone was like, you need to call back in, like, 2014. And it was like, okay. And so what I understand right now is that for the next 24 and a half hours, I can just soak this up. Absolutely soak it up. Because it's going to be another 5 years until Detroit. So, but I'm up here to talk about HALT. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Or the spirituality portion of it is humility, acceptance, love, and tolerance. Or through this journey, so, you know, through this journey, I have every meeting that I went to, I've been talking about HALT and stuff like that. And I'm from Idaho, and somebody from Texas was like, hey, you know, we do the blahs down in Texas. Broke, lonely, angry, and horny. They are so special down there, I'm telling you, full of life. So, you know, HALT for me was a pivotal point in my sobriety. And it wasn't necessarily just HALT, but the solution was being able to identify what I'm feeling. Because when I got here, I had no idea what I was feeling. I was a train wreck, and all I knew is how to drink and how to hurt people. And so when I got here, I knew that I wanted to stop drinking, but I just didn't know how. And they kept, you know, all the acronyms that they have, you know, live and let live, you know, easy does it, HALT, and hungry, angry, lonely, tired. And once I found the solution for me was being able to stop, identify what I'm feeling. Am I feeling hungry? Well, grab something to eat. Am I feeling lonely? Well, go hit a meeting. Am I feeling angry? Probably better work a four-step. You know, if I'm feeling tired, maybe get a little bit of rest. You know, and those are just things, some of the simplest things that normies have no problem with, I had a problem with. And so when I was able to stop, be able to identify what I was feeling, and be able to address it, things got a little bit better. You know, things got a little bit better. It helped me roll into the spiritual portion of HALT, the humility, acceptance, love, and tolerance. Because when I'm taking care of myself and I'm working on the problem, then I get the privilege, I get the promises, I get to be able to have a little bit of humility. And humility is standing up here talking to you guys. Absolutely. I'm just a little old farm boy from Idaho, you know, and that Alcoholics Anonymous has saved my life, you know, and you know, acceptance is the key to my problems, you know, no matter what's going on in the world, you know, I need to be able to accept what's going on for being what it is. And being able to let go, you know, it's huge, absolutely huge. Love, passing love, full of love today, absolutely. Can I get a woo woo? Yeah. You know why I love life today? Because I'm sober. Because I get to get up. I'm not coming to. I'm not passing out. I get to get up. I get to watch the sun rise, and I get to watch the sun go down. You know, and there was a time in my life when I was in a little concrete, little thing, and you don't get to see that stuff. You know, you just don't. And, you know, I got another chance at life. You know, and I love it. And love, when I got here, I could not love myself. You know, I was just, it took me a long time to do my initial four step because I was so scared of what I was going to find out. You know, that I had been such a horrible person, I'd hurt so many people that, you know, I just didn't want to look at myself. And the miracle of it was when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys loved me until I could love myself. And for that, I'm very, very grateful. Very grateful. And nowadays, you got it. Nowadays, I get to love you. You know, the newcomers coming in the room, I get to love you until you can love yourself. You know, I get to pass it on. And tolerance. You know, today, not all of the little things seem to bother me as much. You know, I have a little bit more tolerance. You know, love and tolerance. Love and tolerance. You know, we're we were standing out there at the gate, and it was like we're all trying to get into the dome last night to have a wonderful experience. And you know, sometimes we just have to stop and take a breather, you know. And you know, I really am. I'm so grateful to be sober and to be able to have a solution in my life today. And let's see. I have plenty of time, she says. I have a lot of time, actually. I mean, I'm not even half over here, guys. I knew that there was going to be a couple things that was going to happen when I got up here. I was either going to get up here and I was going to make somebody laugh, or I was going to get up here and I was going to just flop, or I was going to get up here and do a little bit of both, you know. And I'm usually a pretty fast talker, but we'll try and stretch this out a little bit. Service. I want to talk just a little bit about service, you know, being able to give back and you know, for free and for fun. I've never been the coffee maker, but I knew the coffee maker. And so early on in my sobriety, it was some of the best times in my sobriety, because early on in sobriety, I got to show up to our 8 o'clock meeting at 6 o'clock to help the coffee maker make coffee. You know, and I got to stack all the chairs, and I'm a little on the OCD side, so you know, we have yellow and orange chairs, and so either they're all yellow over here and all orange over here, or I would offset them in yellow red, you know. And then when somebody came in, this newcomer would come in and he took this yellow chair and put it over here by the brown chair. It's like, whoa, we got a problem here, you know. But that, you know, it was service, you know. And I got into service after my 1 year birthday, and they told me, that's when I got a home group, and they said, you know, we need a grapevine rep. And I was like, well, I don't know what the grapevine is. He said, you're our grapevine rep. I was, you know. But what service has done for me is been able to, it teaches me responsibility, you know. And some of those nights when maybe I really didn't want to go to the meeting, it was like, you know, by golly, they need me. I have a responsibility. Let's go show up. And usually those are the meetings that I get the most out of, you know. And it's been a nice long journey of service. Being the grapevine rep, being the treasurer, you know, I didn't even know how to balance my own checkbook when I got here. And they gave me, you know, a checkbook. And, you know, now I get to be the GSR, and I get to give back. And I get to help make that connection between me, God, and you, you know. And I'm grateful for that, you know. Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. Alcoholics Anonymous has also given me my family. I sobered up when I was 21 years old, and I met my wife just like a month after getting sober. And so I have had the privilege to walk through my life and my marriage with you guys, my peeps, Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when I got married, you guys were there. When I had my kids, you guys were there. You know, and every step of the way. You know, and what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me and the 12 steps is been able to help me be a father, a son, a husband, a brother. All of these things I took granted. Well, I wasn't a father and I wasn't a husband when I got here, but I took everything else for granted when I got here, you know, and I didn't know how to live. And you guys taught me the solution. Part of the solution is HALT, hungry, angry, lonely, tired, you know, and working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And being connected, you know, there's several things in several events that we have go on throughout our year that I just do not want to miss, you know. And we have the tea snack barbecue. We have the New Year's Eve party. And you want to talk about lonely? My very first New Year's Eve party, I came in and I had just gotten out of treatment. You want to talk about broke? I mean, I was pretty broke. And they had a raffle, and there was a room probably 200 people, and everybody's dancing, everybody's having a good time, cutting the rug, you know, doing their deal, and I'm lonely. You know, I'm lonely. I'm sitting in the corner with all the lights, all the smiles, all the happiness, and I'm lonely. You know, and there was this guy named Don. Don came over that night, and Don had 20-some-odd years of sobriety. And he came over, and he sat down, and he looked me in the eye, and he started talking to me. You know, and here I am. I'm fresh. You know, I just 30 days, 60 days of sobriety. And here this guy is, and he's looking at me. He's loving me until I can love myself. You know, and it didn't start getting better until I started doing the action. You know, started doing the action. Got a sponsor. Started working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Started being in service. You know, and giving back. And then now, my life is great. I get to work with sponsees today. I get to work with my sponsor today. You know, I get to get back to this wonderful, wonderful, wonderful thing that has saved my life. You know, I get to go to Atlanta, Georgia, baby. And I, absolutely, Atlanta knows how to throw a party. You know, absolutely. And I get to experience, I get to see, you know, the speakers last night were absolutely fabulous. You know, absolutely. You know, and I get to experience that today. And what I know today, we were sitting on the top balcony last night, and what I realized is this is so big, this is so huge. You know, this is not just, you know, one little small little teeny thing. Alcoholics Anonymous has no boundaries. You know, and to see all the different countries, and to see the pride. When somebody went out there and flew their flag, you know, and to know that because of what two men did and started, and their higher power has been able to reach so many different people, you know, it's a miracle, you know, and I'm just grateful to be a part of. And I don't know why. I really don't know why some people get it and, you know, come here and get to stay here, and I don't know why some people don't get this deal. But what I do know is that I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing, so I keep getting what I've been getting. And what I'm getting is life today, you know? And I got a buddy, and he called, I think it was last night, or the night before last, he called. You know, he's in jail, and he's like, "What's going on, man?" "Well, we're at the International AA Convention, having a blast, you know?" And he's like, "Well, he ain't coming, you know." But it's a constant reminder in my life of, but for the grace of God, there go I. You know, and I understand that it's all one arm length away. You know, absolutely. And if I don't take care of my body, if I don't take care of my spirituality, then I'm going to go back out. I'm going to have that 1 week time, you know, and I don't want to. I want to stick around here. I want to stick around here, and I want to help AA thrive. I want to help keep AA alive so that my kids have a place to go and my grandkids have a place to go. Because if they have my genes, we're going to have to watch out. You know, and in my family, you know, my wife, I don't deserve her. I absolutely do not deserve her, and I didn't deserve her then. I don't deserve her now, but she is so absolutely wonderful. She, first of all, I met when I was a month sober. She didn't drink, she didn't smoke, and she didn't do drugs. And it was like, this is awesome. You know, and she's such a wonderful person. She's given me two beautiful kids, and, you know, they're off in, since we made our plans to come to Atlanta, they went to the Oregon coast to see her sister. And she's been shooting me all these pictures, and they're 4 and 6 years old, and they buried them in the sand, you know. And it's like, oh man, you know, I really want to be there. You know, I want to be there. But what I understand is that I can't be there if I'm not here. I cannot be there if I'm not here. And being here is going to allow me to be there. So I know it sounds funny, and it's in my head, but it sounds good to me. And it's what I understand. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous comes first. It's the highest priority in my life. If I'm not sober, if I'm not taking care of myself, I don't get my wife, and I don't get my kids. And so, I don't know. I live in Idaho. We don't have a beach. So maybe we'll have to go back to the beach. But this event only comes around once every 5 years. And you bet you, and San Antonio was my very first one, and my mind was blown. Absolutely blown. That lady, she remembers her name, but this lady sang Amazing Grace. One verse in English, one verse in Spanish, one verse in English, and it was just, I don't think that there was a dry eye in that place. And I'm just so grateful to be able to have that connection to be a part of. Am I about done? Oh, look at that. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. One more thing. Real quick here. Okay, so it's done. It's done. Thank you, God. It's done. So I got that letter, you know, I got the email formally inviting me to come speak at the International AA Convention. And I was like, oh my goodness. And I call my delegate. My delegate's like, hey, well, you know, I'm a techie, you know. He looks it up. He looks at the room. And he says, you know what? It seats 9,500 people. I was like, oh no. 8 days later, I have a stomach ulcer. You know, it's like, come on. And then a week after that, I got 3 kidney stones. So now that this just went off, I'm done. If nobody today has told you they love you, I love you, and I'll take it for another 24. Yeah.